Okay, so I'm Molly Marin. I'm the webinar coordinator for the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. You'll see Dane's name. It's really me. We share the account, so I always like to tell everybody that. And I will put my contact information in case anybody needs to get a hold of me. A few reminders before we get started. On our webpage, and the link is in the chat, is a copy of the presentation for today as well as a handout. And all upcoming professional development opportunities are also available on our webpage, so please check that regularly. You can also join our email list to get those opportunities sent to you. During today's webinar, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of the webinar, we'll share a link to a brief evaluation. If you could take a few minutes to complete that, we do appreciate the feedback. So we're pleased to have our second webinar in our five-session webinar strand, strand number 23, Using Universal Design for Learning to Support Tier 1 Instruction. Today's topic is Learner Variability is the Norm. We are excited to have with us two UDL implementation specialists from CAST, Melissa Sanjay and Bill Wilmot. And at this time, it is my pleasure to welcome back Melissa and Bill.
Hello. Thank you. As Molly said, my name is Melissa Sanjay, and I'm here from CAST. And I have with me Bill. We're both implementation specialists. By way of introduction, I came to CAST this summer, and I spent a lot of my career as a teacher and a principal in alternative schools in Boston. And I'm excited to be at CAST because UDL continues my passion for working with students who, for whom traditional environments did not work. So trying to make the environments work for all. And I'll let Bill introduce himself.
Yes, hello again, Bill Wilmot. I also came to CAST this summer, was previously in a principal in a middle school, high school inclusion school. And then before that, a principal in a K-8 school and taught math and science in middle school. I am going to be on the chat today and happy to respond to any questions, thoughts, ideas, and Melissa is going to present.
Yes. So we're going to try to use the chat. We hope to see a lot of traffic in the chat. Well, if we don't see a lot of traffic, maybe we'll make some traffic ourselves for the folks that watch this later. But just to let you know that CAST is a research and professional learning nonprofit in Boston that was the originator of Universal Design for Learning. So our options for today, when we teach about UDL, we like to use a little UDL, so we want to give a lot of options. So our options for perception for you are to follow this projection that's on your computer, to go to the website, or to go to that bit.ly, and you can see the slides on that bit.ly. Also, you'll have an option to watch the recording. It'll be recorded, so you can watch it through as we meet with you, but you can also watch it later again. So your options for expression today are to stand, sit, walk. You can pace the room. We're probably not going to know what you're doing because we won't see your faces on this webinar. But you can go into the chat or you can raise your hand if you want to ask us any questions. Stop us at any time. Also, we want to encourage you to get any tools out that you need for expert learning, whether you want to open another window on your computer to take notes in a Google Doc, you have colored pencils, notebooks, fidgets, markers, anything like that, anything that you need to organize and process information, we encourage you to do that. Because today we're talking about variability, we want to encourage you to express your own variability. So our goals for today are to strengthen the concept that the barriers in the environment, and we'll go a little bit over the introduction webinar that we did and remind you of some of that. But one of the foundational concepts of UDL is the concept of the barriers in the environment and not the students. So we're going to try to strengthen that concept today. We're going to make a connection between a learner's variability and the context in which the learner is in. We want to do a little experiencing, so we want to experience some learner variability and empathize with learners. And then we want to plan some action steps for infusing UDL into our classroom, our school, or our community. All right. So Right now, if you have a second, we would like you to put into the chat your personal goals for today's workshop. Neuroscience tells us that our brains are very goal-directed. So those are the goals that we've designed this workshop through, but you may have your own goals. And if you could make those public and let us know what your personal and professional goals for today's workshop are, Bill and I can make make note of that and be able to answer the questions as we go along. So just take a minute and type in the chat, if you could, what your goals are for today. So Bill has to share some discussion and thinking and questions for others who might watch this after the fact. Jennifer would like to increase her knowledge. Yes, welcome, Jennifer. I agree, Bill. Welcome, Jennifer. All right, if you didn't want to make your goal public and put it in the chat, that's fine. Just make sure you know what your goal is, because the main purpose is that you are watching this webinar with a goal in mind, with a learning objective in mind. So we want to spend a little bit on RTI and MTSS and its relation to UDL, because that is part of the webinar series we're on. So part of what we do at CAS is we talk about universally designing Tier 1 instructions. So the purpose of universally designing the Tier 1 instructions is such that we can make it as accessible to as many learners as possible, so that we would have fewer learners in a Tier 2 or a Tier 3 situation. But we also encourage people to universally design, to whatever extent possible, Tier 2 interventions and Tier 3 interventions, because we want those interventions to also be as accessible as possible to all learners. And you'll understand as we go along that all learners have a jagged learning profile. So they may be getting a targeted intervention for one type of skill, but they would need that to be universally designed for their variability as well. So we have universal design for learning going all the way through. And we want to make sure that all curriculum and all tiered interventions are accessible to all learners. I'm going to review kind of what we did on our last webinar. If you were at our last webinar, this will be a review. But if you weren't, then you can go back onto the website and look at the first webinar if you're interested in going deeper on any of these topics. So our UDL core concepts come from three main spaces. So the first space that we refined our first core concept is through architecture. And we talked about how universal and design for architecture informs universal design for learning and teaches us that the barrier is in the environment. Next, we went to neuroscience, and we'll spend a little time here today because what neuroscience taught us is that variability is the norm, and we learned that through some of the content that Bill presented to us in our first session. And last, we go to our guidelines, our CAS guidelines, because one of our foundational concepts for CAS is that the goal of all of this, the goal of each of the guidelines, the goal of all of the teacher moves and the options, is to develop expert learners so that students can use this access to develop agency for themselves. So we want to do a little poll, and maybe Bill and I will try to, if we can, participate in this poll as well, so we can get some more answers. But we want to assess our own variability. So we're going to do this by a personality framework that has been developed, and some of you may know this, some of you may not, but there has been said that there are four types of people, and the first type is a north. So a north is someone who likes to take action, try things, plunge in. These are your doers. These are the trial by fire, I'm going to figure it out as I go kind of folks. A person who is an east likes to look at the big picture and the possibilities before acting. A person who is a west likes to know all of the details. Exactly how is this going to walk out? What is going to happen in each step before they even start? And a person who is a south likes to consider everyone's feelings and hear all voices before acting. So our first poll question is, who are you when you are grocery shopping? Are you a just go and see? I'm just going to see what's there. Are you someone who wants to kind of look at the big picture as to what's going on? Are you a person who wants to know everything? You make a lot of lists. Or are you someone that wants to consider everyone's opinion when you're grocery shopping? So take a second and answer this poll. All right, looks like we have a couple north. Ooh, we have a lot of north and one west. All right. So I think I can click end poll. Is that correct? I can move on. So the next poll, we're going to do another poll that's exactly the same. And you are planning a party for your friends. Which are you? Are you going to pay more attention to people's feelings? Are you going to plunge right in? And you look at the big picture, what's the purpose of this party? What's my goal? Or are you going to pay attention to every single detail, the color scheme, the flowers? Ooh, we have an even split here. I think I broke the tie because I am a South when it comes to that. Okay. So two more scenarios. The next scenario is you're planning a party, but this time it is for your boss. So are we different when our boss is coming? Do we have more, do we look at more details? Do we look at a big picture? Do we care how everyone is feeling? Or are we just plunging? So for those of you that are watching, just know if you're the same or different in each of these categories as we go along and choose your categories. Okay, I believe we have one more category. Yes, you are on a committee that is deciding which curriculum your school should purchase. What are you? Are you looking at all the details? Are you worried about who's going to like it? Are you looking at the big picture? It's like everyone's looking at the big picture when it comes to curriculum. So before we get to that, I moved too fast. So what did you learn about yourself when you did this? We can just kind of chat in the chat about it. What did you learn about yourself when you were answering these questions? Did anything surprise you? Were you the same in every single category? So Bill says he thinks of himself as a big picture person when he's not considering the context. I'm the same way. I think of myself as I cheat and I call myself a South, I think East, because I'm a little bit of both a South and a big picture person, a person considering people's feelings plus a big picture person. But when I go to the grocery store, I take a list. I don't want to buy a bunch of stuff I don't need. So I am very much a details person when it comes to going to the grocery store. All right, so Tamara says that she's usually a big picture person, but it can also depend on situations, right? So the purpose of us going through this is to understand that variability is not just about, it's not finite, it's not a fixed thing. Yeah, and Jennifer also says it's dependent on situations. So our learners are very similar. Our learners could be interested in one way of learning one day and a different way a different day. And that's why we advocate for UDL, where the options are in the environment and options aren't necessarily assigned to individual students, because in that context, it seems as if that student's finitely always going to want an audiobook. So I have a colleague that would prefer an audiobook for nonfiction, but they would like to read fiction. So it depends on even which kind of book it is for that colleague as to how they best retain the information. So that's why we talk about putting our options in the environment for the student and having them available to everyone, because our variability can be very contextual. So we're going to move on. We're going to watch a video that I think Molly's going to pull up for us. It is a video by Todd Rose, who worked for CAST, and he's going to talk a little bit about variability. I'm going to stop my screen, my webcam, so I don't distract us while we do that.
Hold on a second, I'm tweaking the audio.
Okay. This might be this is a different video. I think your YouTube might have skipped ahead.
Oh, okay, hold on. Sorry.
No problem.
Bear with me a second, folks. Sorry about that.
No problem.
The myth of average? Is that what you're trying to show? Okay.
Has a problem. They've got good pilots flying better planes, but they're getting worse results, and they don't know why. For a while, they blame the pilots. They even blame the technology. They eventually got around to blaming the flight instructors. But it turned out that the problem was actually with the cockpit. Let me explain. Imagine you're a fighter pilot. We're operating a machine that, in some cases, can travel faster than the speed of sound, and where issues between success and failure, sometimes life and death, can be measured in split seconds. If you're a fighter pilot, you know that your performance depends fundamentally on the fit between you and your cockpit. Because after all, what good is the best technology in the world if you can't reach the critical instruments when you need them the most? That's a challenge for the Air Force, because obviously pilots are not the same size. How do you design one cockpit that can fit the most individual? For a long time, it was assumed by designing for the average pilot. That almost seems intuitively right. If you design something that fit for the average sized person, wouldn't it fit most people? It seems right, but it's actually wrong. And 60 years ago, Air Force researcher Gilbert Daniels proved to the world just how wrong this really is and what it was costing us. Here's how he did it. He studied over 4,000 pilots. He measured them on 10 dimensions of size. He asked a very simple question. How many of these pilots are average on all 10 dimensions? The assumption was that most of them would be. You know how many were? No such thing as an average pilot. What he found was that every single pilot had what we call a jagged size profile, right? It means you're not, no one's at the same on every dimension. And this makes sense. The smallest person doesn't mean you're the heaviest. Doesn't mean you have the broadest shoulders or the longest torso. Every pilot has a jagged size profile. And you design a cockpit on average. You've literally designed it. So the Air Force realized they had a problem. And their response was average. Five fighter jets where the cockpit was designed for an average-sized pilot. Instead, he added that the companies who built these planes designed them to the edges of dimensions of size. Rather than design for, say, the average height, they wanted a cockpit that could accommodate the pilot and the tallest pilot as the technology would allow. Companies that made these planes, as you could imagine, weren't happy, right? They argued and lobbied, and they said, it's going to be impossible, or at least impossibly expensive, to build a flexible cockpit. But once they realized that the Air Force wasn't going to budge, suddenly it was possible, and it turned out it wasn't that expensive. And in fact, they made great strides, leveraging simple solutions we all take for granted in our everyday lives, like a job. As a result, the Air Force not only improved the performance of the pilots that they already had, but they dramatically expanded their talent pool. They have the most diverse pool of fighter pilots ever, but here's the thing. Many of our top pilots would have never fit in a cockpit designed on average. Most of us have never sat in the cockpit of a $150 million fighter jet, right? But we've all sat in the classroom. And I would argue I would argue that these are the cockpits of our economy. And I think we all know that we have some problems. We're spending more money than ever before, but we're getting worse results. Whether we're talking about declining test scores in math and science, or probably know that we have over 1.2 million dropouts every single year in high school. What you may not know is that at least 4% of those dropouts are known to be intellectually gifted. We're losing over 50,000 of our brightest minds every single year. So we know we have a problem, but do we know why? So far, we've been content to blame the students. We blame the teachers. We even blame the parents. But here's the thing. I think back to the Air Force example, and I can't help but wonder how much of this problem is just bad design. Here's what I mean. Even though we have one of the most diverse countries in the history of the world, And even though it's the 21st century, we still design our learning environments like textbooks for the average student. No kidding. We call it age appropriate, and we think it's good enough. But of course it's not. I mean, think about it. What does it even mean to design for an average student? Because a student is not one-dimensional, like struggling to gifted. Students vary on many dimensions of learning, just like they vary on dimensions of size. Here are a few obvious ones. And just like size, every single one of them has a jagged learning profile, meaning they have strengths, they're average at some things, and they have weaknesses. We all do. Even geniuses have weaknesses. But if the fighter pilot example has taught us anything, it's this. You design those learning environments on average, odds are you design them for nobody. So no wonder we have a problem. We've created learning environments that, because they are designed on average, cannot possibly do what we expected them to do, which is nurture individual potential. But think about what that really costs us. Because every single student has a jagged learning profile, it means that the average hurts everyone, even our best and brightest. Even for them, designing on average destroys talent in at least two ways. First, it makes your talent a liability. We all know kids like this. So unbelievably gifted in one area that their educational environment can't challenge them. We also know what happens. They get bored, and a shockingly high number of them drop out. The second way that the designing on average destroys talent is that it means your weakness will make it hard for us to see, let alone nurture, your talent. We all know kids like this as well. Like the kid who is gifted in science, but who is a below average reader. Because our science textbooks assume that every kid is reading at grade level, this kid's in trouble. Because for her, science class is first and foremost a reading test. And it's doubtful.
Thank you, Mom.
That we will ever see what she's truly capable of.
All right. So I'm going to sum up a little bit at the beginning, because I do know that it, for me and for Bill, it seemed like it was skipping a word or two. So the story of the beginning is that they were designing airplanes for average size pilots. So they were assuming that that would fit. So if you're a little bit bigger, you could cram in, et cetera. And what they found out was that these averages on all these dimensions didn't equal anybody. So then he transferred it to the classroom. And I think you heard that information a little better about the jagged learning profiles, et cetera. So I want to ask what resonated with you for that video and what troubled you. And Bill, if I missed any like key points that you thought were kind of choppy in the video, go ahead and chime in. So what did folks think of that video? And those of you who are watching later, I encourage you to, if it didn't work very well for you, just pause the webinar, go to YouTube and type The Myth of the Average Todd Rose, and you'll get it, and you can watch it. It's actually longer, so those of you who are with us can watch the entire thing. I think it goes on for another 10 or 15 minutes. So Bill says it makes him rethink many of the things that we do in the classroom. Yeah, how can we build those adjustable seats for our students as when it comes to our curriculum? How can we allow them to select how far up or far down they want to be as it relates to the curriculum? Yes, and Bobby says something troubles him is that sometimes or troubles them is that sometimes we're still doing much of the same thing the old way. I also every time I see those seats with the half desk, I remember being traumatized about not being able to fit in them sometimes. So how do we adjust? All right, so we're going to move on to do something more specific to learning tasks. We're going to play this game called the variability game, where we look at different profiles of students and learning targets, and we're going to anticipate barriers. So we've tried to develop these profiles such that they are jagged and varied for each learner. So if you have a pen or if you want to jot down on your computer somewhere, or Bill even wants to put it in the chat, because this learning target is something we want to keep in the back of our mind. Our learning target for this task is going to be to determine the central idea of a text and how it is conveyed through particular detail. And as we go through this game, we're going to want to ask ourselves, is this task well designed for my learner? So the first learner we're going to talk about is Isabella. Now, Isabella has recently moved to the United States from Colombia. She is an only child and is currently the only English speaker in her home. Isabella is learning English quickly at school. She has strong reading skills in Spanish, which is her first language. She's very social and loves to make up plays and dances with her peers. Isabella recalls facts quickly. Isabella can get agitated and nervous when asked to perform a task in front of peers with no time to prepare in advance. Isabella needs support for her to stay focused on her work, and she tends to wander or socialize when she's off task. She needs to resolve conflicts with close friends before moving on to learning activities. Isabella loves researching and writing about her home country, and Isabella enjoys working with a Chromebook. So, if Isabella's task was to identify five key sentences from the text that you think reflect the theme of the text, and link these sentences to any song, news article, current event story, or another book you've read, would that be a task that's well designed for Isabella? I'll give you a second to think about that. And either jot down or put in the chat or just make a mental note. Is this something that's well designed for Isabella? All right, our next task is to think about the theme of your favorite book. Be prepared to share it out loud in the next 5 minutes to the rest of the class. Is that something that's well designed for Isabella? And if so, why or why not? Isabella might be nervous about this, Bill says. It does not say that she has strong speaking skills, so that could be something that would be in her way. Oh, yes, it says she doesn't get to agitate when she doesn't have time to prepare. Yep. All right, our next task for Isabella is with a partner you do not usually work with, make a video that shows the theme of the book acted out. It does say she is very social and loves to make up play. Other thoughts on this one for Isabella? working with someone would support her learning. That one might be a good option for Isabella. All right. If you answered yes, why did you do so? If you answered no, why do you so? And what questions do you still have about the context? So a lot of us answered as we went along. Bobby said the partner with whom you do not usually work could be a challenge. But what questions do you still have about the context? Do we have any questions about the context when we think about these options for Isabella? Bill's wondered about her English and how strong it was. Yeah, it does say she's learning English quickly, but we don't seem to have any information about what that means. That's correct. It says she recently moved, so we don't know how long that was. Tamara says that partner work can, but it could be used to be a support depending on her background. Yes, it can, but it could be a support depending on your background. I assume you mean partner work, Tamara. All right, so we're going to have a different learner. We're going to talk about Daniel next. I'll read out loud for those of you that can't see it. Daniel and his older brother live with their parents in a small apartment about 45 minutes from the school. He is bilingual in English and Spanish as are both of his parents. Daniel is funny, outgoing, and loves to be the center of attention. He has lots of friends. He tells friends he strongly dislikes animals due to an unpleasant accident at a farm when he was young. Particularly interested in politics and current events. He needs lots of time to process information and often appears bored in class. He needs directions repeatedly about what and when to do something to stay on task. He needs support for tasks that require executive functioning skills. He is easily distracted, particularly by ambient noise. He's motivated by group work and interactions with his peers. He likes to use the internet, and he loves singing and drama. So here are the tasks for Daniel. Identify 5 key sentences from the text that you think reflect the theme of the text. Link these sentences to any song, news article, current events, story, or another book you've read. So would that work for Daniel? What are our thoughts? All right, sounds pretty good to Bill, especially using the internet, linking to current events and new songs. Cameron said it might be difficult since the task has many steps. True, he might need some support for his executive functioning since there's a lot of steps there. That's something I didn't think about, Tamara. Nice. All right, our next task is think about the theme of your favorite book and be prepared to share it aloud in the next 5 minutes to the rest of the class. Is this something that Daniel would like? And Tamara supports that he would like the last part of the first task, I think is what she's referring to. Any opinions on whether or not Daniel would like to think about the theme of his favorite book and be prepared to share it aloud in the next 5 minutes for the rest of the class? Yeah, Bill says he needs a lot of time to process the information. It seems like a concern. I was thinking the same thing. It might be a little fast for him. I think it's similarly with Fast for Isabella. And the last, with a partner you do not work with, make a video that shows the theme of the book acted out. Tamara says we could add one of his strengths, video, in time. True, we could do that. And Tamara, you're getting at the some of our reflection questions are how would you redesign these experiences for Daniel? So yes, and Bobby wants to know if we're assuming he can understand the theme and can identify them. So I asked the first time, did we have more questions about the context? But sometimes we actually have more questions about the learner, and we need to know more information before we can identify if it's a good task for that student or not. Nice. Any other ways of these? I'm leaving this up instead of the reflection questions because you can refer back to them. But any other ways we could redesign some of these tasks to be more successful for Daniel? Tamara suggests we lead with the strengths and support. Bill reminded us of our learning goal to determine the central idea of a text and how it's conveyed through particular detail. Because we want to give Daniel options and redesign these tasks with additional options that would support his movement towards that goal. So I do think video would move him towards that goal. That wouldn't get in the way of him identifying central idea. Giving him extra time wouldn't get in the way of him identifying a central idea of the text. Okay. We have one more, Gabriel. Gabriel has four siblings. He lives 30 minutes from school and plays three sports each season. He's very athletic. Gabriel likes museums, arts, and sciences in addition to sports. He loves going on field trips and loves it when a field trip comes to the classroom. He loves games and problem solving and is motivated by competition. Sometimes he claims he is tired when he is faced with a writing task, and most days he is not interested in reading assigned books. He prefers to do his work at home when assigned research-based activities. And he seeks to please others, but sometimes this results in conflict when he's doing group work, especially. So we'll go back to our first task. We're going to ask Gabriel to identify five key sentences from the text that you think reflect the theme of the book, or the theme of the text. Link these sentences to any song, news article, current event, story, or another book you've read. So how might we put in more options to this, so that Gabriel could access this task? Or is this task already well designed for Gabriel? You can take notes in the chat. You can take notes on your notebook, on your computer, in another window. It does say that he is... where did I just see that? He's not interested in reading assigned books. So it does not say if he can pick his own text, but that might be an option I would give Gabriel so that he could access the task if he could choose a book that he's interested in. Bill started to say that the writing task may be different, but noticed that it's not actually a writing task. True. Jennifer said linking to songs, news, et cetera, might be attractive to him, kind of competition. That's true. And maybe he'd like to read something about art and science to identify the theme. All right. So think about the theme of your favorite book and be prepared to share it out loud in the next 5 minutes to the rest of the class. Is this well designed for Gabriel, or do we need to add in some options? Bobby agrees with Jennifer about linking to songs. So think about a theme of your favorite book and be prepared to share it aloud in the next 5 minutes to the rest of the class. This one good for him? Bobby said that one might be okay, except 5 minutes might be not be enough time. I agree. Because it does say that he would be able to choose his own books, it seems. And it doesn't say he has any difficulty sharing aloud. And it might spark his competitive side. Good point, Tamara. All right, so our last task is with a partner you do not usually work with, make a video that shows the theme of the book acted out. Good point, Bill. Bill wants to know more about why he wants to do research activities, base activities at home. There could be several reasons for that. So with a partner you do not usually work with, make a video that shows the theme of the book acted out. So for this one, we don't know if he gets to choose his own book or not. He sometimes does well in group work, but not always, sounds like. We might need to know more about this if he can choose his own partner. Tamara wants to know more. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for doing that activity with us. And I want to know, how did it feel to be in the shoes of a specific learner? And what insights did this exercise give you about designing learning? Bobby said he probably wouldn't be able to choose since it's working with a partner and they work on the same video for our last task. But how did it feel to kind of walk through an experience with a learner? Yeah, Tamara said relationships matter. I think that's true. And I think that's how we get a lot of our information. There are sometimes things that are not on whatever learning profile that we are given by our administration, that some things aren't even on there. In addition, context changes. So even if we had a particular profile that was very accurate of a student, when they come to our class, if they just had a fight with their parents or they didn't eat breakfast that morning, maybe their context is different, which changes their learning profile, and you would only know that if you had a relationship with them so that they could express that information to you. And Bill is also saying that's why he's been thinking context can be so different from day to day. I do think relationships, though, help to mitigate some of that because the students will talk to you about what's going on with them. Sometimes we need to investigate a little bit. All right. So I want to remind us here of this UDL design process. We started talking about a little bit our last session, and the first step of this design process we talked about our last session. So if you're interested in what we mean by setting clear, rigorous goals, you can go back to our first webinar and look at that portion. But this part that we talked about, variability, links directly to anticipating barriers. So the anticipating barriers is what we use our guidelines for. So we use our guidelines to anticipate predictable variability. So if you remember in our first session, Bill talked about the neuroscience of the guidelines and how it was built around the engagement, representation, action, and expression networks. And those are predictable variability for brains. So we can use our UDL guidelines to design based on these predictable variability. We want you to keep in mind, though, before you go to the guidelines, and I'll give you the website for the guidelines, and it's also on the website for this webinar, where it's a document, a PDF. And so we want you to think about UDL as a framework and not a checklist. We want you to think about looking at things through UDL lens, because sometimes when folks look at the guidelines and they see there's 31 checkpoints in the guidelines, they say to themselves, I cannot design 31 options in every single one of my, or 31 options among 31 checkpoints even, so more than 31 options in every single one of my lessons, which is not what we're asking you to do. We're asking you to look at learning through a UDL lens, thinking about where might my students be variable, where can I predict that they are variable, and knowing that I have a relationship with them, where can I know that each of these students are going to have come up against some barriers, and we use the guidelines in that way. We want to intentionally anticipate barriers, and then through that, we want to design options for engagement, representation, and actions and action and expression. And if you remember, action and expression means how our students show what they know, how they demonstrate to us. So that's our assessments and our assignments, where they demonstrate to us their understanding. So a couple ideas around designing to minimize barriers, and we're going to have a longer session that Bill will lead this, I think it's next week, around designing to minimize barriers. And but just some options or some ideas around designing to minimize barriers in the network of engagement is thinking about maybe offering two relevant texts. So when we talk about doing options with teachers that are new to UDL, we try not to, we ask them to not overwhelm themselves and or their students by designing a million different options, and then they might get despondent or disillusioned when none of the students choose one of the options because they're kind of overwhelmed with the choices. So we say start small, just try something, just pick a couple things. So you could just pick two relevant texts instead of just having everyone read the same text. Or under perception, you could read aloud and have students follow along on the paper, which I'm sure many of you already do. Or you could have a video, a group of students that want to watch a video on a certain topic and a group of students that want to read about it and have them kind of go to separate areas of the room. And then some ideas for some low lists around action expression is have students maybe do, instead of a paper, they do a blog. Instead of a paper, they do an infographic, or those are the options, a podcast, an infographic, or a paper. Also, another option for action expression is, you know, graphic organizers. So I want us to do a little activity. So Bill put the UDL guidelines in the chat, so you can click on that, or you can look on the website for this webinar, and you can pull up the PDF. But I want you to take a look at the two-sided guidelines, and think about your three most effective practices and figure out where they fit in the guidelines. So if you can, as you do it, type it in the chat so we can have a conversation. But this is an activity for now, or if you would like, for later. But just look at those guidelines and see where are my teacher moves? Where do they fit in these areas? And as you do that, I'll tell you a little bit about that udlguidelines.cast.org website. It has ways that you can click around. So when you go to the guidelines, you'll see at the beginning a video of David Rose, who is our founder. But then you scroll down a little bit, you'll see that each of these guidelines are clickable, and then you can click actually each checklist, and you can read about not only what more about what do we mean by offering multiple means of representation under perception, but you can also look at the research that supports those guidelines. In addition, we want to look at these guidelines and all these different options as you look through them and kind of digest. We want to look at them as something that you use strategically at the right time. So going back to our goal, as we talked about in the activity, if our goal is to writing, then we want to see how can we offer different options for that goal, and when is the most appropriate place to offer options. So if the goal is to write a thesis statement, maybe we offer options for the content that they're writing about or the text that they read to develop that statement. Anybody have any questions about the guidelines, or anybody want to say where they, what they normally do that they're already doing that fits within these guidelines? And for those of you that are watching along, make sure to click on those guidelines and click through. Well, for today, our big idea was that learner variability is predictable, and you can use the guidelines to design options based on this variability towards the goal of expert learning. So we always try to remind people that the goal of all of this, the reason we are doing this, the reason we're giving multiple options for perception, multiple options for action expression, is so that our students can be reflective and so that they can learn more about themselves as learners, and so that they can become expert learners. They can learn more about their variability. And as we do this, we learn more about our variability. We learn more about, well, maybe I do that because that's the way I would like to do that. I did that a lot. And I told you a little bit about this guideline site, but that's also, it's linked to the, it's linked to the slides if you'd like to see that. So I think this may be close to our last slide, if not our last slide. But we'd like to know, Bill and I'd like to know if there's any questions you have, what concerns you, what excites you, any other questions you might have. I was right, that was our last slide. Anybody have any questions? Any final comments you'd like to make, Bill? If you're, I think you're on the phone here.
I am. I was muted. That's why it took me a second. Great to be on the chat with everyone. Thank you for jumping in, participating. We are next time focused on barriers and designing to minimize barriers. So I'm going to be leading that. Melissa's going to be on the chat and look forward to talking to you then.
Okay. And thank you, Jennifer. for your comments. And thank you to Bobby and Tamara as well for joining us.
Yes, thank you. I'm just posting the survey, too. Thank you all for being here. I appreciate it. And if you could take a few minutes to complete the survey, we do look at that every week.
Great.
And as long as nobody has any questions.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving to everyone, too. Bobby says happy Thanksgiving, and I concur, happy Thanksgiving.
Agreed. Safe travels if you're traveling, anyone.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Hope to see everybody back next Monday, 4:15. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.